Welcome to the MedTech Talent Lab, the number one catalyst for advancing careers and building high-performance teams. Sponsored by the Anthony Michael Group, helping companies secure in-demand talent in regulatory affairs, quality, clinical, engineering, R&D, and other areas for medical device, digital health, diagnostics, and other organizations across the U.S. life sciences sector. Here's your host, Mitch Robbins.
All right, welcome back to another episode here on the MedTech Talent Lab podcast. I am your host, Mitch Robbins, the founder and managing director here at the Anthony Michael Group. Joining me today is Mr. Mark Rhine, who is the head of talent and learning at Glaukos Corporation. Mark has built a storied career over the last 25 plus years, building learning and development programs across industries. Deloitte, Sprint, Abbott, and now Glaukos are just some of the fine organizations Mark has contributed to. His expertise, which I know we're going to dig into today, lies in the areas of organizational development, performance management, leadership development across all levels, and project management. Educationally, Mark holds his bachelor's degree in environmental design from the University of Missouri Columbia and various certifications in executive coaching and organizational change. Mark is also a certified diversity executive. Now, for those unfamiliar, Glaukos Corporation is an ophthalmic medical technology and pharmaceutical company based out of Southern California that is focused on novel therapies for the treatment of glaucoma, corneal disorders, and retinal disease. So without further ado, Mark, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks, Mitch. I'm thrilled to be here.
Well, I am more thrilled than you. I know this is a long time coming, so I appreciate the fact that you are here ready to share some nuggets about all things learning and development. Before we get into that, Mark, what have I missed about your background? What else do you think we should know about where you've been, what you've done, and anything of that sort?
No, you did a really nice job of summarizing what is increasingly a longer and longer career, but I've been fortunate and blessed to have worked for some great companies and have had a variety of experiences. I used the Trivial Pursuit game piece as an analogy of all the little pie pieces. I feel like I've been around the pie in learning and development and over the last couple of years.
That's awesome. Well, I know that you have done a variety of different things as it relates to building programs. And that's one of the biggest things I want to dig into with you today, Mark, is if I'm not mistaken, you were really tasked with coming into Glaukos and building out this learning and development program. Is that right?
I came at a great time. Glaukos is a 25-year-old company. I came in November of 2020, so about 3.5 years ago. And certainly a lot of learning and development was going on, particularly with my colleagues in the commercial space. But what was a blank canvas really was the area of leadership, interpersonal development, and things related to our values and culture. And so as I was talking to our head of HR, my boss at the time, she said, look, this is what we're going to be walking into. And this is either going to be exciting for somebody or, not. And for me, it was really exciting. And so I came in as an individual contributor with a lot of latitude and able to put my stamp and mark on what we're doing today.
Well, and as you and I've gotten to know each other a little bit offline, I consider you one of the renegades out there because there's traditional corporate learning and development as what many people see it and know it as. And as we were talking, which I'm so excited to share some of this stuff, I'm like, man, that's a whole different way of thinking about this. So if you would, let's give our listeners your viewpoint on what learning and development traditionally is and how you kind of sometimes have a contrary opinion to how it should work.
Yeah, well, I'm chuckling as you use the word renegade. I guess that could be true. I don't necessarily think of myself that way, though I think this space is really open to different kinds of thinking. And ironically, a lot of my thinking about what we're doing at Glaukos is formed in two ways. One is through the big company that I worked for. I mean, I wouldn't be where I am in my career, without the Sprint experience. When I was there, I mean, it's no longer really a company anymore, but it was with Motorola, one of the largest learning and development organizations in the world. Abbott, I got tons of experiences, but I also got to see what did and didn't work. But the other big influence is really from my customers, our employees themselves, about what they need and what they want. And so to me, this all comes down to prioritization. It is with whatever resources of time and money that we have, it's really no different at Glaukos, which is maybe on a smaller scale than a company like Abbott, is there is a limited number of dollars. And our employees have limited time and attention, which is becoming more and more limited. So in a way, it's a bit like a game or a puzzle. It's a design challenge. What are we going to do with what we have? And what's going to give us the biggest bang for our buck in terms of learning and development activities? So it's a never-ending kind of process.
For sure. And so I want to talk about the biggest bang for the buck thing for a minute. If I'm not mistaken, 78% of the workforce at Glaukos is touched by basically middle management, right? Manager to senior director level. Is that right?
Yeah, that's a really close approximation. It varies a little bit. Yeah, but a middle group of leaders has a direct impact or touch point with the majority of our employees in the company.
So when you talk about biggest bang for your buck, is that what you're saying? Hey, let's focus on where we're going to get the absolute most return out of the resources that we do have from a learning and development perspective.
Absolutely. And as our company grows and expands, we had about 550 people when I joined in November of 2020, and we're at about 950 people today. One of the big challenges that our company and all sorts of companies have is how do we keep our unique flavor and culture as we get bigger and more complex? And those are, I mean, exciting stuff happening. If you read our ESG report, if you go online and read about a company, there's all these cool stories of innovation happening. And it's not possible, I don't think, for any leadership team, senior leadership team, to own the mantle of culture of a company. And that's where the intersection to me of leadership development, those day-to-day conversations, but the primary touch point for our employees is through the important middle level leadership level. And so that's really where we started, which is to say, if I could only do one thing, where would I start? And that's where we started. And that happens to be also, I think, where the energy and the need was. So we have great leaders in our company. How can we make them even better and also be the messengers and the advocates and the champions of not only people, but our cool culture?
So if you would, Mark, take us through basically the last few years. You came in with a blank canvas, like you were saying. What are some of the important pillars that you feel like you guys have put in place from a learning and development standpoint?
Well, so we did a couple of things, and a little bit simultaneously and overlapping. One of the first projects that I led was the need to have a more visible platform that also served a couple different purposes, which was the design and the implementation of our most integrated learning management system. And I have to say, that was not my own solo project. That involved a lot of colleagues to make that happen. Not only is that a practical way to get learning to employees, but it also is a marketing and branding step to putting learning and development forefront in employees' minds. The second thing then was to do a bit of a needs analysis. And I say a bit because technically and formally, we didn't do a more traditional learning needs analysis. I think we're at a size where we're able to listen to our business HR partners, our senior leaders, and even have interviews with a group of employees to more confirm what our intuition was, which was, let's get started with mid-level leadership development. And so that's where we designed and implemented and facilitated, and I think we've gotten over 95 of our leaders through our cornerstone leadership development program called Leader Lab. And that really is all about Glaukos leadership and connecting with employees. And the tagline is through better conversation. So we see communication as the thread to run through all of our leadership development. And then from there, Mitch, it really sort of evolved, which was, so for more experienced middle-level leaders, we've got Leader Lab. We went down a notch, and I say down, I mean more from a maturity level, and designed and now facilitate a program called Launch, which is for newly appointed supervisors and managers. We have a capstone program ready to roll in place for more senior leaders who have graduated from Leader Lab. And then throughout that, you can sort of imagine those programs as anchors, maybe as a mall analogy. Those are the anchor stores. The filler stores in the shopping center of learning are individual resources and learning activities and classes that we're carefully identifying and placing. So a class on negotiation, a class on executive presentations, and just layering those in very carefully based on the primary needs of the majority of our employees.
That's awesome. So Mark, the Leader Lab, this Launch program, the Capstone program, that was all built in-house?
It was. And we used some vendor content and materials, some expertise like assessments, third-party executive coach to debrief, a leadership assessment, but all designed internally. Now, that said, as we're adding more classes and resources, there are experts in things like trust, negotiation, change leadership I mean, I certainly know those areas, but it's not worth my time when there are people smarter than me who have better product. So we're continually, I think like a lot of learning functions, deciding that build, buy, or customize approach.
Yep. And I think the old adage, Mark, is smart people surround themselves with smarter people. So,
well, there's a lot of smart, a lot of people smarter than me. So, yeah.
Mark, how do you manage the catch-22 of folks internally wanting and desiring the opportunity for learning and development, but not having the time to train? How do you deal with that?
Oh, you know, it's become more and more of an issue. I had the opportunity a couple of weeks ago to listen in on a webinar of some folks in positions similar to mine at some very well-known companies, much, much, much bigger than me. And if I closed my eyes, I heard the same commentary from them that we're experiencing too. I truly believe that people really do come and stay because of culture and opportunity. And we've been relentless in how we push that in terms of people leaders talking with employees. We created a class called Grow Your Development, which is all about employees' individual development plans and how to think about their learning and growth and career, which really matches the Leader Lab experience for leaders. I mean, we hear over and over from our Great Place to Work survey results and through anecdotal conversations, employees want learning and development. The challenge, I think, is time. We're as busy in our company as other companies are. People are moving at lightning speed, which is really where that prioritization is, I think, incumbent on learning and development, is to carefully select and identify things that are going to give employees the biggest value and use their time. So we're monitoring that. We're even looking at how quickly people enroll in a newly announced class. We've had classes fill up in less than 12 hours before. That's giving us an insight in some data. We're looking at evaluation and seeing where there's consistent participation or where there might be drop-off. So I don't have an answer to that other than, you know, from a design perspective, what is the most efficient design and delivery of a learning activity and what topics and content are going to be most useful for employees? So,
yep. And so based on the metrics that you have, are you guys polling? You're looking at the metrics that the learning and development platform has as far as the engagement, how long they're staying, how quickly they sign up, what programs they're signing up to. Are you doing any other type of survey work internally to figure out what people want? Or
we are. I think for the size of our company, we're at a point where it's still, I think, viable to have anecdotal information through our business HR partners and through conversations. And as we look towards the end of 2024 into 2025, I suspect we'll be ready for a more formal kind of traditional needs analysis with a group of employees. And we got our feet wet with that as we have also taken some really impressive strides with diversity, equity, and inclusion, which have been a part of our company since its inception. But in 2021, we started our DEI forum, which is a group of internal employees who are advisors. And among other things, our forum has worked with an external consultant to design and facilitate our Glaucus World Cafe set of learning series. We don't call it training. We call it a learning exploration. And in fact, I have my DEI forum mug with me today, but we did a learning needs analysis for the topic of diversity, equity, and inclusion, specifically because that can be a bit of a set of topic areas that can be challenging to navigate. What is it that people want to learn and know? And that needs analysis really helped us shape the whole series of learning activities. So we've got experience with that. I think we'll take it to a next level next year.
I love hearing that. You know, a couple of years back, this DE&I thing became this blown up thing to where now I say this with respect. I really do. But the word culture is a major, major buzzword. And a lot of times people use the word, but they don't necessarily know what they mean by saying the word, right? When they say, oh, it's our culture, it's the blah, blah, blah. A lot of times people throw out DE&I and they think it's something that they need to say because it's an important topic, but they're not necessarily doing anything about it to stand behind what it's actually standing for. It's awesome to hear that you guys have like an actual formal program that is being built out on purpose.
Yeah, we do. And it's funny because there's almost an infinite or closed loop of thinking around that too. Where does culture begin and end? How stuff gets done around here? And where does DEI actually fit? And we take kind of a meta view of DEI. So certainly on the the important social factors like age, race, ethnicity, gender, orientation, and all those markers are critically important. And I think we're doing things that are a uniquely Glaukos way of thinking, is kind of our own way, which is, what does the journey of DEI mean to me? How does it fit with our three values, dream, lead, and care? And particularly important to us is this idea of inclusion. We make a really, and will continue to make a really strong link from inclusion, that people's voices are heard and their world experiences are considered, as a link to innovation. And our value of dream is about innovation, and not just R&D, product innovation, but innovation by HR, by finance, by marketing, by anybody in our company. So I am excited. I think the company is getting even more excited about, hey, this makes business sense. It's also great for people, but it really speaks to the heart of our company, which is, yeah, dream, absolutely innovation, leading and caring for another, one another.
That's awesome. You know, I mentioned at the beginning of the show, one of your areas of expertise is performance management. What's your philosophy behind performance management?
Well, I never use the term. And so I know what you're saying, by the way, and words matter to me. I often say, I don't want my performance managed, and I don't think employees do either. The firm that I came from had moved away from the more traditional performance management. And it's something that is a little bit scary. And what I mean by that is that there were no year-end performance appraisals or ratings. But as I walked into Glaukos, we too don't have that. So in one sense, I didn't have to initiate or navigate that change. It's been part of our culture, and it's worked quite well. What we do instead of that traditional year-end performance management discussion and those ratings is that we move to a more formal and kind of balanced approach of something called check-ins. And a check-in is designed as a recommended quarterly conversation between people leaders and employees. We don't mandate that people have check-ins. We offer a goal-setting platform through our HRIS Oracle technology. We don't mandate that people put goals in as well. We offer guidance. We offer training class on how to enter goals. We offer thought leadership in our Grow Your Development class and reference all these things as part of our leadership development. We feel like people are adults and that there's more than one way to do something. So we see HR as a shepherd, a steward, a guide to, you know, we can call it performance management, or this category of creating goals, having conversations, and helping move people forward. And so far, knock on wood, it works really well. I think it's better statistically and from a, you know, a research perspective, the quality of performance ratings, whether it's a 3-point scale or a 5-point or a 4-point, I don't think it tells us much at all. I think it becomes bureaucratic and time-consuming, and often looks backwards in a way that doesn't help people along the way. So we think it's a better way, or at least for our company, it's we're reducing process and paperwork and hopefully focusing on the most important thing, which frankly is the conversation.
So I appreciate this perspective, and I agree on a lot of fronts. One, with what you said, people don't want to be managed, I believe is what you said. And I would assimilate that to people don't want to be sold, they want to buy, right? Very similar.
Yeah. I think that doesn't negate, though, you know, we talk about feedback a lot. We teach a couple of models of feedback. And I'm a big believer in starting with the strengths. We use a model that a lot of listeners probably know, is easy one, plus delta. Hey, Mitch, what's going well? Plus delta, Greek symbol for change. What do you want to do differently? Or here's what I, as your people leader, would like to see you do differently. And so if we think about that, and in the spirit of, you know, the OD term of appreciative inquiry, how do we move from here to here continually? How can we propel people forward and engage them in their own conversations? Because most people are coming to work wanting and actually doing a great job. Why aren't we celebrating that?
Well, and that's one of the things I was going to say is, so, okay, so people don't necessarily want to be managed, but they starve for feedback, and people naturally are good. They want to aspire to be better in one way, shape, form. If there's no necessarily formal reviews, how do people know where they're where they stand? Let's say you have more of an introverted leader for some reason, and they choose to skip some of these conversations that you guys call optional. How is the team getting feedback in this respect then? And how do they know where they're at in terms of being able to be in line for perhaps a promotion or things like that?
Yeah. Well, so I think there's a realistic part of this. And I'll kind of edit a bit of what you said. It's a slight difference. I think actually that people want to be led and in some case managed, but I don't think they want their performance managed in the way of, I think the connotation can be negative. We think we have a more positive and effective way of doing this. So that aside, and sorry, not to quibble on the terminology, is we also send reminders quarterly about, hey, it's check-in window season. Usually it's a 2-week or so window. You employees and people leaders should be talking together. We don't care, you know, if Susie schedules it or if John schedules it, have the conversation. Secondly, after that quarterly recommended window, we anonymously and confidentially send a 3-question survey to all employees and say, have you as an employee had a check-in with your people leader and what recommendations do you have? So we're actually monitoring it. Again, we don't want to know specific people. We want to get a pulse on the company to see if people are having conversations and the quality of those conversations. And the indicators are really strong that we're having them. I guess as a bit of a leap of faith, and I've been around enough years, I think I can confidently say this. I think we are at least as good or better than other companies that have performance review processes. I think we're having the conversations, they're more frequent. I think the quality, frankly, is better. And as we look at our turnover and our people, our positive response rates on our employee surveys, we have a nice dashboard that we're monitoring and looking at to say, are people coming and staying? Are they happy? And the indicators are all quite high. So I think it's a scary leap of faith for some people. And I read from experts all the time, like, oh, you shouldn't have a rating system. You can still have a year-end conversation and a wrap-up. We're not saying that. And if you look at our rate of promotions, our low turnover, and some other information you can see on things like our ESG report, we feel like this is a system that works really well culturally for us. It might not be for other companies.
I think it gives more autonomy, more agency to the business and to the leader and to the employee themselves. That's how I see it.
If there's one thing I learned about our company that I really, and maybe it gets back to the hidden renegade in me, is, you know, people like autonomy. Daniel Pink talks about autonomy and motivation, mastery, autonomy, and purpose. And that idea that if you want to motivate people, that they feel like they're skilled at their job, mastery, purpose, that they have a connection to the ultimate goals or mission of a business. But autonomy, and the visual that I use, is how can leaders widen the framework of decision-making as wide as possible for people to design and have influence on their work? That doesn't mean letting people do whatever they want all the time, but can we open that frame up as big as possible? I can't think of any.
That's great.
There are very few humans who don't want a level of autonomy. So great call on that.
100%. I only got 2 other questions for you. And one of them is around workforce planning. Now, if I heard you correctly offline, you don't believe in workforce planning. Is that right?
Yeah, I wouldn't say that I don't believe in it. I would say our approach at Glaukos is also unique. It's not nearly as intense and probably process-driven as some companies do with workforce planning. I think there's a balance that all of these systems and processes that HR tends to own or co-own or shepherd, where there's just a tipping point and you get diminishing returns. So, you know, I don't want to say to you, I hope I didn't misrepresent, that no workforce planning, rather it's a much more streamlined approach. And as our company shifts and changes, we also recognize workforce planning as it relates to things like succession planning. The crystal ball on those things is becoming more and more challenging. I mean, I would guess our company is probably not different than others, that the traditional workforce plans or even things like career maps and plans are becoming more obsolete more quickly than they ever were. It's almost hard to look, you know, a year down the road, much less 3 to 5, what is it we're going to need? So we do it, but it's kind of a unique way.
If you would, for the audience and for me too, very quickly outline, what do you see as traditional workforce planning and what do you do differently? I think you started to touch on it as far as succession planning, as far as career mapping. You just started to say that that's traditional workforce planning. Is there anything else that stands out to you as like perhaps old school or traditional and how you guys are doing it differently?
I think it's probably going into a much greater level of detail on specific roles and jobs and what's going to be coming up next Make no mistake, we do that. We have that on our map. We look at it as we think about hiring patterns in upcoming, you know, quarters or years. It's simply more streamlined. And as we look at our own succession, I think the idea of identifying critical roles, those that are hard to fill or that have particularly specific areas of expertise, is really where we put our time and attention. I just don't think the more traditional way of doing workforce planning is probably a lot of our audience knows it, with really detailed plans down into the organization is viable. We'll see though. And as part of our own growth as an HR organization, along with our business leaders, is the old ways of doing things when we were a 350 person company. We're looking at that periodically to say, we may need to adopt a new way, but we're pretty comfortable right now.
You know, that's so interesting that you just said that, because in my head, as you're talking, I was thinking, man, everything that he said today, it sounds clean. It sounds streamlined. It sounds like biggest bang for your buck, as you mentioned earlier. And then I started to think, this company has grown rapidly in the last few years, almost 400 new employees in 3.5 years, or whatever it may be. Is that contributing to adding actually more corporate structure, more corporate layers? And then you started to say, hey, we'll see how this changes. So any thoughts on that? Like, in the last few years, have you seen it become more traditionally corporate, or have you guys really worked hard to try and maintain that philosophy of let's be as streamlined and lean and thoughtful about not putting on such monotonous paperwork that we don't necessarily, or processes that we don't need?
Great question. Yes and yeah. I mean, the cheat answer is yes to all of that. I mean, it is more corporate, formal, consistent, sustainable is what we talk about all the time. So, you know, I think back in the older days before I was even at the company, it was such a go, 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 almost startup mentality. We're now into our early adulthood, right? We're 25 years old. So now those behaviors, there are some things that we have to do that may feel more formal, maybe a bit more process oriented, either to us in HR or even to our clients. We work very hard to keep that as simple as possible. And we really do. We talk about it constantly, is where is this going to help the business and make a really strong business case for that? And where can we let some things be a little more natural and loose and almost kind of see the pants. So yeah, it even feels different to me 3.5 years later. I know it feels different to some of our clients. The real question is, are they getting what they need in a way that's useful and good for them?
And I think change is inevitable as you scale. It just has to happen. But it's a matter of kind of, I love what you said about like, we work really hard to figure out where the change absolutely needs to happen versus what we can keep a little bit more loose, so to speak. So,
you know, I mean, if I imagine, and I do, I'd have conversations, our HR team has conversations with all sorts of people in the company, including our senior leaders, who can legitimately say, why are we doing this? And if we don't have a really good answer, other than, oh, it's a cool thing to do, it has to make sense for the business, either directly for them, and sometimes selfishly for us to be able to get our work done. If we can explain that, it's accepted.
So end on this note with you, and it's kind of a big one. You've done this for a long time. I mentioned in the beginning, you've had the opportunity to do this at so many different companies. Is there a particular lesson or two that stand out to you that if you were to go back, for somebody listening who's, you know, either trying to refine their program or trying to build it from scratch like you have, is there anything that stands out that you would do differently? Lessons learned to help somebody not trip on the same obstacles you did.
Oh, wow. Okay, you have a limited show time. You know, I love Daniel Pink. He talks about regrets and how regrets can be a really good reflective exercise. I'm by nature really introverted. And the concept of building and establishing deep business relationships, even though I coached on that, wasn't something that I practiced consistently. And so I think I've gotten better at that as I get older. I mean, as I have more experience, it comes more naturally. And from a kind of a, I wish I would, or I would counsel a younger me or other people, is continually getting out there and listen to the business. HR and L&D serve the business. And so all the cool stuff and what we might do and what the possibilities, that's fine. But if it's not meeting people where they are, it's really lost. I guess the other thing, and it's words I've lived by for a number of times, people like, well, can we do that? And my answer is, we can do anything. We can do anything in the context of what the priorities are, and time and budget. So the answer is always yes, and sometimes with a big and following it. And we really might have to stop something else or do X differently or buy Y you know, et cetera. So I think sometimes people are like, well, our plan was this. We're really going to execute on this, and that's what we're going to do. And hey, we have to be change leaders and adaptable and flexible as well. So I guess that would be advice that I would give.
I'm smiling as you were talking about yes and, because I'm thinking about being a dad to young boys. They say, try to find ways to say yes and then put a caption on what the yes and or yes when instead of no. So that's that's awesome.
I can only imagine. Awesome. Those are great lessons that sets them up as future great leaders. So
yeah, that's awesome, Mark. Well, listen, if it's cool, first and foremost, I want to, again, thank you. You shared a ton of value today. I really have got a lot of respect for you and what Glaukos is doing. Is there anything in particular you want to share about what you guys are excited about as of late?
And I have never worked, I've worked for some fantastic companies. I've never worked for any place like this, but the amount of excitement and innovation, like we're small and mighty and with aspirations that we keep meeting and, you know, even exceeding. I would say read about us. And as we learn about the importance of the chronic diseases that we're treating, people with eye diseases, and what we're trying to do and are doing for people, it's just an honor to be a part of it. So
that's awesome. Well, it leads me to my final point is that if it's okay with you, we'll put a link in the show notes to both your LinkedIn profile as well as to Glaukos website, and that encourage folks to reach out accordingly. But Mr. Mark Ryan, Head of Talent and Learning at Glaukos Corporation, thank you so much for being on the show.
Hey, thank you, Midge. I appreciate it. It's fun.
Thanks for listening to the MedTech Talent Lab podcast. For more content-rich episodes, log on to theanthonymichaelgroup.com or subscribe to the show on your favorite podcast platform.